Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Last week, I interviewed Richard Wilkinson, who had done an enormous amount of investigation into the allegations of racism at Pretoria High School for Girls, in which 12 white girls were suspended, and on the day we were talking, we're having hearings into allegations of racism against black fellow students, and the appalling, largely concentrating on the appalling way in which the Gauteng Department of Education had handled this matter. Ham-fisted, aggressive, escalatory, the charge sheets were poorly written, etc., etc. Now, by the end of the week, a decision had been made. The 12 girls were exonerated. They were found not guilty of racism. There wasn't sufficient evidence to establish it. And from the evidence, from what one saw, which was really a discussion on what the white girls perceived generally as a disadvantage relative to black students, and it wasn't the school specific so much as what they had to go through to get to university, we saw the unedifying spectacle, I thought it was an unedifying spectacle, of the Gauteng Education Department sitting out a press release in which it said they accepted the decision. They pointed out, however, that it could not be appealed against. And the reason they said that is because it couldn't be appealed against, and it couldn't be appealed against by Gauteng. However, the department has now decided to investigate racism at the school in general. Now, I want to take this discussion a bit further because my esteemed colleague Terence Corrigan and I have written an article which we're hoping to get published, and more immediately Terence has written an article which has been published and is in the Daily Friend of yesterday. And it deals essentially looking at the issue of racism. On the one hand, Terence looks at perspectives. And on the other hand, that whole idea is developed on the role that narratives play, and particularly play in the race debate. And Terence, perhaps I will turn over to you to give the gist of what it is you've tried to convey about narratives in a debate as fraught, sensitive, and let's be honest, exploitable as allegations of racism.
Well, first of all, good morning, Sara, and to your wonderful listeners. Always a great pleasure to spend some time on Chai FM with the wonderful Jewish community. Here's the deal. First of all, I'm gonna push back a bit about when we use the term debate, because I think this is one of these signifiers that we like to roll out, and it has it conjures up the image of a robust exchange of views. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of our public discourse, now a pompous phrase, but I think it's useful in that it's I think somewhat broader than debate, is really a case of hectoring. It's putting forward what in some respects is a type of holy writ.
Mm.
These are the tablets handed down in Mount Sinai, and you will obey without question. Now, narrative. Narrative is important because in a world of what is effectively infinite information, we can never know anything, but narratives are sort of stories that help to organize this this sort of thing. They help us to make sense of the world. And as you quite correct, very exploitable. Any politician worth his or her salt has a narrative. That's how we can connect things, as diverse as crime, immigration, healthcare, whatever. These things may be directed against real or perceived opponents. Obvious one that we see in South Africa frequently is the question of the of foreigners. And that one has a great deal of traction. People you know, who are in stressed conditions will find a, you know, find this a very attractive, attractive explanation for their problems. You know, I would have that. I would have that business opportunity if the Somalis, the guy from Somalia, didn't have it. That's also frequently this enables us to simplify very complex things into bite-sized chunks. What happens with racism is I think South Africa has a great deal of historical trauma, intergenerational trauma. In a way, this is kind of the, you know, one of the founding narratives. There is again founding stories in South Africa. The titanic struggle against the evil apartheid regime. And I remember this is now 30 years in the past. There are people who've been brought up with this but have no personal experience of it. But in a way, you know, you want a part of it. You know, there are contemporary stresses that come with being middle class in a pressured society like South Africa, and I think it's very, very easy to then look for an other to blame. Now, you know, if you live in an informal settlement, that odds are, I imagine, that's the Zimbabwean.
Mm.
You know, the guy who came and took your job or took the job that you should have had. You know, perhaps if you want to assign a kind of social conservatism on that, it's the drag queen or the homosexual who's just literally not in your, you know, that represents some sort of alien culture. If you are middle class, you know, that can be somebody who is, let's say, a peer competitor. People who, you know, might have it together in a way that you don't feel you have it together, that have generational advantages. And unfortunately, this has sunk in. Now, Richie Wilkinson, I'm sure, will talk to you about the legitimating ideology, the critical race theory or whatever. And I think, you know, there's a lot to be said for that. Sometimes I think it's a lot more visceral.
Mm.
And I think, sadly, in Gauteng particularly, I think we have this particular kind of middle, you know, stressed middle class conjunction. We have a political class in the ANC, which, in some ways, has focused on a racially inflected nationalism, which I don't think is universal in the ANC, because I don't think it's particularly useful in a place like Limpopo or let's say the Eastern Cape. It's just not really in the experience of their activists. And it's something that's sexy and easy to understand, and it's also, let's say, a deceptively easy win.
Mm.
You know, trying to graduate generations of children from dysfunctional schools to be literate and numerate, that's tough stuff. You know, but when we've got a WhatsApp group, this is a specific defined area. Absolutely. We've got the culprits, we've got them right here, and we can get them.
Mm.
And I think this is what happens, and it's very useful to a broader political class to say, you see, this is what, you know, those dreadful whites or Indians or whomever are really like. And I think understand that we're in a very interesting political moment where parties traditionally representing very diverse constituencies have had to try and find a working relationship. There are a lot of people, not least in this province, who don't like that.
Mm. I had an interesting experience yesterday. I was addressing a conference in the education sphere, and I raised this, saying that I was critical. I said that the Gauteng department had dealt, to say they dealt with it badly was, I think, being kind. I said it's too serious a subject to deal with other than, certainly quickly, but to deal without being thorough, without doing a lot of discussion that doesn't, with discussion that doesn't happen in the media, researching it properly, because often you find, and I say this from experience, having both had teenage children, we know what that means, and having been involved in school discipline, you know, conducting school discipline myself, often what is apparent misconduct isn't, or if it is, there are huge social economic issues to deal with. There are background issues that may affect a penalty or no penalty, depending on the consequences. It's also, I made the point twofold. One is that I implied that experiencing racism is not in the domain of one group and committing it in the domain of another. We are all capable of holding and expressing prejudices. But particularly what I was very critical about, and why I'm particularly critical about Gauteng, is for all the reasons you've spoiled out, and debate, you're right, is not what we're having. It's so easy for venal politicians to exploit. And the fact that it's done, particularly around this time of the year, just before prelims in schools, is for me particularly heinous. And there are a whole lot of reasons. Obviously, one is that because of the seriousness of it, you do not want to either ignore allegations nor prejudge children accused of racism until all the information is in. All the background is understood, and exactly the background you're talking about. The demographics of the school, what the power relationships are or have changed, et cetera, et cetera. And pointing out that particularly with children, and not to forget that teenagers, much as they think they are, you know, fully formed, perfect beings, very emotional, hormones sort of soaring through their bodies, capable of being actually very nasty, just because they are. That's what children do. They can be very nasty. Or they're just ignorant. And that applies on both any and all sides of the spectrum. And I could see this didn't entirely go down well when I said this. But it was the feeling that we actually have to have this conversation, because the consequences for either being the victim of racism or being found guilty or charged with racism can virtually destroy a child's life. So my anger was very much aimed at the fact that if we're going to, it's bad enough when adults don't get it right amongst adults, but when adults deal with it badly with children, I think there's a different level of culpability involved.
Oh, look, I think that this is, if you want to, you know, short of sort of concentration camps or knife-wielding jihadis, if I had to put the appellation evil on someone, I would go after people who use children as props in grotesque morality plays.
Mm.
We've seen this again and again. Now, and there's a reason for that, because children have, you know, there is a protectiveness that all of us feel for our youngsters. And, you know, whether your child is the recipient or the victimizer or the alleged victimizer, there's a protective instinct. So it's the most intrinsically divisive issue, and it's also one that it's very, very difficult to actually deal with as rationally. But that is precisely where people who carry those official responsibilities need to actually demonstrate some professionalism. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, as we've discussed offline, you know, we've had instances where we had an instance in this case where a department official goes and addresses a school assembly, and you know, conducts like a political rally. Mm-hmm. Should we expel these people? You know. I'm sorry. I think that the one person who should be expelled is the person conducting what should be a sober investigation in this manner. You know, this is not some sort of semi-educated street punk. This is a guy who is who carries a minister of responsibility for the functioning of schools. And as you know, we've discussed in respect of narratives, the whole point seemed to be that there is this allegation, because we believe that racism is everywhere, therefore, ipso facto, these allegations must be true. Best,
yeah.
And this was, and I think shamefully, this was repeated by journalists, by analysts, and you know, everything just seemed to just seemed to be aimed at reinforcing them, not asking the basic question. You know, is it possible, because it's an allegation, that actually these things have no merit? And apparently, when they eventually went before an advocate, well, the view there was, no, they don't really have any have any merit. Look, I don't know precisely what was on that WhatsApp group, but I'll tell you one thing that raised some concerns for me is that extracts were leaking out, and it seemed to me that if what was appearing in the press was kind of as if it was what it was, then there wasn't much else that was. They didn't really have very much. I imagine that if they were throwing around K bombs or whatever, those would have been front and center. But when, you know, you're saying things like, well, black girls, you know, need to accept that apartheid isn't a thing anymore. You know, we could have a debate, if we wanted a debate, about whether that is insensitive or, you know, how these things affect across generations. And I think that would be a sensible conversation. But sorry, you know, that's not. I struggle to see racism, unless of course we've decided racism must be there and we'll retrofit whatever fragment we can onto it.
Well,
this is what we're seeing now.
Exactly.
Let's do a finger business.
Well, and this is exactly proof of the debate we're not having. I feel strongly, particularly being running the Free Speech Union, that one of the things that has to happen that's crucial is that the genuine discussions have to be held, and distinction has to be made that free speech, in my view, should largely be just that, free. In other words, part of what proves the dynamism of a democratic society is whether you can say things that may offend or hurt people, or they may say things that may hurt or offend or you may disagree with them. But there's a difference between fact, opinion, and whether either expressing the fact or an opinion is racist, whether it goes into that next level, and there is very much a next level. In other words, life is tough. Things will be said. Things will be heard. Feelings will be hurt. But there's a difference between opinion, between discussion, between just speaking freely, and whether you actually intend to hurt somebody, and whether they have been hurt in a way that whether it goes into the realm of experiences of racism, or whether it's something to be managed. And that's as long as a piece of string. And that's really what South African school children have got to be exposed to. And I'd like to sort of pick you up on this after we've spoken to our sponsors.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Terence, essentially, do we understand what the value and the obligations are in having the right to free speech?
You know, I think freedom is another one of those like sort of sensitive signifier words that we don't really get. We kind of like it because it's I'm saying we, it's not me, but I'm saying national. I think we kind of like the stuff and until we don't. You know, it's a contradistinction to the authoritarianism that we had in the past. So yes, you know, we put that in our national anthem: "Let us live and strive for freedom." But then, you know, there's all sorts of people who are far smarter than I who will then say, "Yes, but freedom doesn't mean." And well, you know, freedom kind of means you can say the stuff I agree with. So yeah, I think South Africa's political culture has a strange sort of internal tension that, yes, you know, you're able to say this, but you know, I can make your life a living hell if you do. And there's certain things that you shouldn't say because this kind of royal we has already has decided that you know we shouldn't say this now. We shouldn't say this or that. But you know, in instances like this, I think we have managed to import some very bad ideas from the United States. Mm. Many wonderful things come out of the United States, but also some clangers. And you know, one of them is sort of redefining concepts like racism. Mm. To say, well, you know, if XYZ says it, then it's racism. If you know, ABC says exactly the same thing, just with a different target, that's not. And just you know, looking at what we've experienced, we've also brought in nonsense ideas like microaggressions.
Mm.
Microaggressions being channeled on a platform at which the targets of said microaggressions were not present.
Mm.
You know, there's the logical flaws here are mind bending. Mm. You know, if a tree crashes in the forest and no one hears, it doesn't make any noise.
Yeah.
Apparently, according to the Gauteng Education Department, apparently it does, and you know. So, yes. Look, you know, here's the basic thing, and this is, you know, when I've discussed this with, let's say, sensible people who take a more restrictive view of freedom, they say, well, you know, if you want to have any freedom at all, you have to accept that it does come with some risks, and. Hurt feelings, I think, are very much on the lower reaches of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think let's just put this into perspective. Perspective is important. You have a WhatsApp group that you know became a massive story, and still is.
Mm.
And you know, I don't imagine we're anywhere near the end of it. Was anyone killed? Was anyone harmed? You know, were any cute furry mammals damaged? You know, a few feelings may have been hurt. I mean, it's one of the reasons why you know it quickly had to go into well, the bigger issues here because the actual issue was trivial.
Well, can I just point out, and this is it's a slight diversion, but this goes into the microaggression side. Is the Department of Education accused? The accusations were about microaggressions, a concept which I agree with you. I think is. Probably the less said about the better.
Absolutely.
But the charges included violence, breaching school rules, and there was something. In other words, if you read the charges, what you had assumed was that a group of white girls went around the school beating black girls unconscious. And no wonder the charges were in trouble before. Despite everything else, and there was lots else wrong with the process. But by very nature, if you're going to remotely accept that a microaggression is something that only those on the receiving end would perceive as wrong, using charges of violence, disrupting the school, breaching in these circumstances, it takes it beyond the level of incompetence, I think, to my conspiracy theories about the politics of it, and as you know, I'm nothing if not cynical.
Well, you know, sort of think about this. Do we even, you know, if people are not even speaking with the same concepts, is a debate possible?
Exactly.
Is conversation possible? And you know, if your answer to that is no. You know, I'm not sure where that leaves, you know, the prospect for that dreadful phrase, social cohesion. Mm. You know, maybe splitting the society up then starts to look like the only way you can do it. Just interesting thing about perspective. I don't know if anybody saw that video from that school in Katlehong where armed men went in and kidnapped two children. It's interesting. I just Googled that now. I think I see one reference to that in a local news platform. I mean, literally, a guy walked in with an AK.
Mm, mm. No, but
for some reason, we are not panicking about that.
Exactly. And of course, the problem is, and I need to say this to wrap up, because we could have this conversation all day. I think the problem is that as a result of the approach taken, if there's one thing we don't end up understanding, is our differences and our traumas. That discussion never ends up happening. So empathy, sympathy, understanding of the other just doesn't happen. Final word in a minute.
I would say I think that there's a funny view about diversity. Seems to boil down to we have the right to be diverse as long as we all agree. I don't know. George Orwell could do something with that because I struggle.
Absolutely, Terence. Thank you once again. I suspect we'll be able to take this further sooner.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you.